We're good whenever you are.
Do you have an extra set of financials?
I do not. I'm sorry.
Which one are you looking for?
What is it?
The spreadsheet?
Oh, here they are.
Oh.
Just too much stuff stacked up here. Okay, it is 8 minutes after 12. I'd like to reconvene this special session.
I have a question on wording. In 6.2...
Wait a minute. We changed subjects, Warren.
Oh.
We're on the budget now.
You cut me off. I was going to announce the budget, but one last question about the ILA. It's fine. Go ahead.
Because I didn't know I hadn't heard that we ended the ILA. In 6.2...
I hadn't finished.
Pardon?
I hadn't finished what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
You would have heard it.
In 6.2, it says, to the extent permitted by law, that clause. I think it should also be inserted in, where is that? Too many pages here. 3.1. To the extent permitted by law, this agreement will commence on the day that it is last signed by a party. That'll be the effective date.
That doesn't have anything to do with the law. It's an agreement that the parties decide on. It's a term of agreement.
But it's still subject to the law.
Not the term of the agreement. The term of the agreement is subject to whatever we decide. We can make it a one-day agreement or a 10-year agreement. It doesn't have to do with the law. So this is just the term of the agreement. Nothing to do with anything in the law.
So you're under...
I mean, there's no law that says you have to have a specific term of agreement. That's up to the individual parties to decide.
But does it harm 3.1 if you say to the extent of the law?
Yes, and because
you wear belts and suspenders?
I would no, because where what would you point to? What piece of the law would you point to that
we don't know the unknown. That's the issue.
What delineates a term of agreement? I mean, what would delineate a piece of law that would delineate what we have?
That's the reason you put those in there.
No, this is the reason we have our attorney look at this and write this. We make changes based on what we want on these kinds of things. We could change this to this period, this is in effect for one day, or 10 years, or 2 years. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have anything to do with the law.
No, that's my understanding from having gone to law school. And it appears the consistency in this under 6.2
is to the extent permitted by law, because that's a material breach, which I hold harmless, which is totally different than a term of agreement.
So I'd like an opinion from the attorney on this.
So I'm trying to follow the discussion. What wording are you proposing, Commissioner Appleton?
If you're on 6.2, towards the first clause.
Yeah, I see where you're at.
To the extent permitted by the law. I think that should be in front of this agreement. In 3.1, should be in front of this agreement. That clause should be there also, to the extent permitted by law.
So you want to copy that wording or cut it and move it?
He wants to copy it.
So no, do you want it in two places or just move it?
Both ways.
In both places.
Right.
And you're asking for counsel's opinion.
Well, I think it should be there. If everyone else wants counsel to look at it, that's fine with me, but I think that it's just good contracting.
This is drafted by two lawyers who specialize in good contracts. So this is the work product of two attorneys who specialize in contracts and have good reputations.
I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just...
I agree with Rebecca. But let's go ahead and ask Richard. Cost us too much.
We're going to approach Richard anyway.
That's
so
right.
One additional question is, fine.
It's sort of identifying if there's an unknown. Right.
If there's an unknown, I don't know. You don't know, but I mean, if all of a sudden something comes up,
yeah,
I don't know. Yes, I think that's why they put those in there. They that was what I learned in contracts. You put this in there in case there's something you don't know. Just like the Jeopardy clause.
Okay, again, this is an opinion of counsel pending, so let's move on. We have another very, very important meeting coming up here in a little over an hour, so.
The county council?
Oh. No. Wait, peace out.
Peace out.
We had one this morning.
Yeah,
yes, no, we have another
one. How is that?
And this it, and this and that, and this and that. So, floor is yours, sir.
Well, commissioners, we have our 2020 proposed budget here for you to take a look at. I do just kind of like preface things that, thanks to Chris, I'm learning the intricacies of reporting dealing with the county bars system as opposed to a regular kind of budget that I am used to. But we put this together. Come to take a look at this. The first page, and I'm going to defer to Chris quite often because he was instrumental in putting the format together and going through this. A couple of things that I would like to point out is we have pages attached for you showing our at the end page 13 that talk about capital investment and the things that we foresee coming up. So the big things are a vehicle. We're 2 years past due to replace a Sprint brake. But this kind of goes back to I do before I got the money allocated.
You didn't give me one of those.
But I do want to have discussions with Chief Collins as we look forward to integration, which is, kind of ties back to what we were dealing with before. Do we need it? Do they have an extra one that's more, you know, that's a little newer that they're not using? These kinds of things. Meanwhile, I do have it allocated. I also have the first payment for our defibrillator allocated for 2020, as well as some money set aside for the communication system, $150,000, which would be our share of the CODAN build-out. So that's there.
Is that going to happen over the next year, or is that sequentially? It's multi-year, isn't it?
It had been talked about to actually have it in place within a year.
Oh, okay.
There is work, and I'll discuss that in our regular board meeting.
Okay.
CODAN right now, the county council is thinking about exploring the possibility of increasing the 911 tax, which is an existing sales tax, and bringing that up by 0.02. I'll have to look at it, but a percentage, less than 1%, which they think might fund the whole thing, and then we wouldn't need to worry about that. We can allocate those funds elsewhere down the line. The other question that I have for you is, we all know that the CID is kind of in our brains and in the forefront, and I have not allocated any funds to paying that off.
Okay.
And I don't know if that is something we should do, shouldn't do, how we want to do that. Again, part of our response, our budget's going to be looked at in terms of any sort of response to the state attorney general's office. So I'm looking for some direction from you folks as far as whether we should try to hold some funds in reserve, knowing that we have a future settlement that we're going to have to deal with.
To me, it seems straightforward, Carl. I mean, the reality of it is it hopefully would be less than $250,000, but we don't know that. So I would tend to be conservative. I will certainly earmark $350,000 plus. It doesn't stop there. We have anticipated additional legal fees looking to the future on the order of $50,000. So it's $200,000.
Yeah, that's been allocated into attorney fees. It's been part of the regular spread.
Okay.
Yeah, we did budget attorney fees. We just didn't.
Well, the $350,000 is, you know, look at the document itself. The AG's office is starting with a potential assessment way over $1 million.
Yeah.
So, reading between the lines, it seems to me that their interpretation of $350,000 is fair and equitable, even though it's a negotiated letter.
Right. Okay. So we'll rework that. I mean, there's enough cash on hand right now that we can actually put that allocate for that. The other thing that I do want to point out, in the past, we have taken certain funds and held them in reserve for capital improvements, but it's all done within the general fund. That change was made, I believe, in 2012, 2013, where they moved funds out of a specific reserve fund into the general fund and just held them earmarked as a line.
Earmarked as reserves, but within the general fund and not a specific capital reserve fund.
Yeah. I'm thinking that that's not necessarily the best way to go about it. We have a reserve fund with a special allocation definitions for what that is to be used for. I think we are better served in putting those funds that we know we're going to spend on those things into the reserve fund rather than keeping them in the general fund. So that's something that I'm suggesting as well.
So what you get, what you would end up seeing is when you get your, or when we get monthly reports out of the county, and when you look at, say, this, pulling that right out from Carl, but you know that we gave you like this comparative or these revenue and expenditure fund reports, right? Essentially, that's all for our designated fund number within the county for EMS is 6511. It's basically a second fund number. So there'd be another set of reports that would be fairly small and inactive because it would just be the cash sitting there. But it would basically be off the general fund books and on to a specific reserve fund.
So you're suggesting it's not just a subgroup of the general fund that would say like capital improvements or CIP?
That's currently what we have.
So
what we're proposing to do is just, and it's really more consistent with what is done in governmental accounting, is putting what we allocate to reserves in a specified reserve fund. That's because what this is, these reports are all off of our general funds, mm-hmm. and not out of our capital reserve funds. So essentially what it would show is in the first year, that in the year that, like in 2019 or 2020, when we put money into those reserve funds, is it would just show a giant expenditure on this, but then it's revenue on the other fund. It's like a transfer to the savings account. And then it would, in that way, those would all be kind of tracked off of the general fund reports.
And
we wouldn't show that we have like $1.5 million sitting in our general funds.
And so how would we decide when and what amount of money goes into his accounts?
That's part of this budget process. Mm-hmm. And it would be the initial part would just be a transfer over. We'd do it with the board approval and the funding of it. And it would be based on what our anticipated capital expenditures are. And then in the future, it would be based on what we expect our future capital expenditures to be, how much is currently in there, and how much we deem to be adequate to fund that, to basically maintain those ongoing reserves. So I think our initial plan is about 750. That could go down with the CID, but.
Your initial proposal is 750 to go into a capital reserves account? So you're talking about capital reserves, and are we talking about a CID reserves as well? Or are these together?
No, that would basically be together.
They would be together.
Yeah.
If you're breaking it all apart, is there any reason why we wouldn't separate the two?
Well, you could separate the two within that, but you're not going to, we don't need to go create a whole nother fund and a whole nother set of accounting books. With the county, where it can just be a separate line.
Right, I'm not asking for any bars, but when you report back.
Well, that's actually all we would do, is just another bars, because that would be a whole lot easier than a whole separate fund report.
Thinking about the way the new commission coming on is going to be able to understand this.
Sure.
Because the new commission is going to be who's working on
negotiating
the CID. So for them to know if capital reserves and CID reserves were separated.
Well, it, just like as we have before and have continued to in the general fund report, right, we have, like right now, there's currently two kind of reserve line items, and it's been for basically a building and loan payment reserves, which is 1 year's debt service on the building. And then we have also have the vehicle and the equipment reserves. So actually, you take those two together, it's more like actually about $867,000 that we would ship, that would go over there, and that there would be those line items, right? So we could just add a third line item in there that says, you know, so the building payment, equipment, CID.
Great.
Yeah. We take the bucket reserve for vehicles and move it from the general fund vault.
Yeah.
That same bucket would then be in the reserve fund vault.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been trying not to interrupt. Working on it, guys. The reason that you have the reserve funds, other than knowing you have the money, is it an audit issue that you have these anticipated expenses, and then when they audit, they want to know that you made good decisions along the way to reserve money for it? Is that?
No, it's just more of a governance thing. The audits are really more looking retrospectively at the accuracy of our financial statements and whether we're following internal controls and things like that. But this is not something that the auditors have brought up or said that we need to do.
Okay.
It's just one of those things we feel like is good governance.
And how much were we going to put into the, for lack of a better term, CID reserve fund?
$350,000. Which is what in that letter from the Attorney General's office, that was what they suggested as their initial offer in the negotiation.
How about the attorney's fees? How much are we having attorney's fees in this?
The attorney's fees are in the general fund budget, not in the reserve fund budget, and I cranked those up to, I think it was up higher than 50. I think it was.
Well, we added 50 to what we had in there before.
Yes, I added an additional 50, and so that would be
page 5.
50 in anticipation of the CID,
right?
Attorney fees.
You got to take it to resolution.
Yeah. So
anticipated
increased 50, to 50,000
additional attorney's fees.
I'm just trying to make sure. I didn't hear that part.
Yes.
Because the attorney's fees,
right,
are always
right.
And well, we spent about
rightly so.
We spent about $160,000 in that entire process
on attorney's fees.
On attorney's fees through that portion, and I believe that $50,000 is what the attorneys advise us to budget for it.
Oh, so we asked Friedman what he thought it would cost going up. So we have a basis for
exactly.
That. Okay, that's what I was concerned about. How are we going to allocate that money, and what's the basis for allocating that money?
And granted, that was his kind of. What he was, that is not the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario would be much higher if they decide, if the decision to fight.
A reasonable number.
A reasonable expectation.
Correct.
So questions about the income for 2019 includes the grants, the ACH grant money, GMT,
mm-hmm.
which is approximately.
Well, we've received.
We've
received about, so we this year we received, the 2019 we've received about, the budget we're expected to get have about $226,000 that will be coming in, that came in 2019. And we're expecting that, a better way to put it actually is that we got, the way the county accounted for it is that there was a big chunk, there was about $68,000 for the ACH that showed up on December 28th. By the time it made it into our account, it was January. The county counted it for January, which is.
It's not just my Thursday.
Accounting, but whatever. So. Basically, our 2019 expected ACH money is about $194,000. what we expect to have, we're basically we budgeted for about $130,000 in 2020 from the ACH. GEMT, our funding that's been, that has come in, is, well, year to date, right now, we're sitting on $671,000, but $435,000 of that was a big retroactive payment for 2017. So we're expecting for so we budgeted for 2018 or for 2020 to have about $315,000 from GEMT.
So the ACH and the GEMT can count on to receive them.
With GEMT is a GEMT we can count on. That's a program that's been set out in budget. ACH is also another program that is, we know is going to get run through 2020, and there's been commitments on that.
So, So my thought is, if this is through 2020, I would like to see, I don't want to see this kind of money rolled into an operating budget.
Right. So the GEMT, we've already have commitments from the state on.
Through 2020.
Yeah.
Right. And I see exactly where you're coming
from.
Yeah,
I get where you're saying. Yeah.
Because with ACH money, we know that that's, I have, in my discussions with them, I was told, count on 80%, at least 80% of what you got this year. So that's what I factored in. And I know that program ends in 2 years.
2022.
Whether or not we can get alternate funding, we'll deal with that as we move forward. But I agree completely is that I do not want to rely on ACH money in our regular operating budget, and GEMT money, my guess is that my understanding of the way GEMT works is there is one pie, and the more people that want a slice of that pie, the smaller the slice gets. So we were kind of, we were one of the first in, we got a big chunk of pie. That chunk of pie plants will dwindle as more people start to realize, well, that was good pie. So,
but we've been given an allocation for this coming fiscal year. They've given us notice of what we can expect to be receiving. Mm-hmm.
I would just like to keep that separate. I don't want to. So what's happening is it looks as if our income hasn't. I mean, it's hard to tell because of the air part that ended. You know, but it was 2.5, and then it was 2.1, and then it was 3.1. So it went up by a huge amount of money.
Well, keep in mind that 3.1 includes the sale of the building.
That's right. So if you take that out, it's about the same. And then if you take this 2.3, which is 2019, that includes
year to date.
Yes, that includes the GEMT and the ACH money.
It does.
So if you take that out, your income is going down, and your expenses are going up. So I'm suggesting that we want to look and say we need to keep that money. Put it in reserves. It may or may not come, but let's not spend it on operations. Let's try to cut the operations as opposed to keeping the same or expanding.
And that's we've been trying to do that.
So,
but at the same time, though, I would say it's not prudent budgeting to exclude funds that you know are showing up.
Not necessarily exclude them. Exclude them from the operating part of it.
Certainly.
Because if you add them to the operating of 2020, you're going to expect that for 2021 because your expenses are going to go up.
I understand, I could call those non-operating revenues, but they're still going to come in into that fund. They can't just go straight into the reserve fund. They're going to come through onto this budget, and so we can have an offsetting expenditure into the reserves funds.
Yeah, and I'm not asking specific. I mean, I don't care how it's done.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And so that's part of how we're. I mean, that's the reason why we're shoving that much over there into the reserves.
And to speak to that too, I my plan moving forward is, you know, we have it now. Let's spend what we need to make sure that's happening. But keep that in mind that we could be looking at diminished revenue. So we're going to be looking for cost savings and ways that we can reduce our operating expenses.
And so our total 2020 budget expenses are 2673. Is that right? Total expenditures.
That's correct.
Yes. Now, one thing to point out with that is I would look, so one thing I need to preface on is, and I do this every time I present this budget, is those first two pages, and I know it could be better presented, and I'm trying to figure out a way to do that, but there's this first page basically is so that it matches up, or, you know, effectively ties out with what we provide the county, which shows what we're starting with in cash and what we expect to end with cash, so that we show kind of the total general funds available and the general funds that we're allocating to places, tie those balance, those equal. The second page here has more, it is like the kind of breaks out where we see operating income and non-operating income, okay? And so that's where you see that, you know, because capital is not, when you're buying capital equipment, that's not an operating expense. Those are kind of one-time purchases, and as well as our debt service on the building, right? Which is still something we have to do every year. But to your point, yes, we budgeted for, we're showing like basically 410,000 of the operating income per se. But we're showing that we're going to put that there's this capital equipment expenditure that includes 150,000 that we may not be making if the county decides to do that CODAN or the levy, which it sounds increasingly likely, right?
Right.
So that could be something that we're not going to get hit with. But yeah, so that 2.6 that you pointed out as the total of expenditures that we're doing is, you know, that's basically allocating out, putting us in at about break even when you factor in both the operating and non-operating. I'm sorry if I may have just been very hard to track there. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So on the 2016 through 2019 sheets.
Yes.
So
And it's important to point out on those, mm-hmm. on these, is that the 2019 is just through
right.
today. And so just
through,
bear that in mind.
Through 2021.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have, so your expenditures.
I think she's talking about this. The 2016 through 2018.
2.5, 2.2, 2.7, and you're suggesting, and I don't know what 2019 is going to be, but it's 1.8 now. I mean, what's the projection?
So the 2.7, the 2.7, keep in mind, had 825 that went to pay down the debt.
That's right.
Okay. So it was really about 1.9 that was on there.
Okay, so we're going from 1.9 to 2.6. 1.9, I don't know what 19 is going to be. It's going to be
2019, we expect that to be about 2.5. So something to consider here is 2019 is when we've gone to being on a
cash.
No, to having 4 full-time EMTs.
Okay.
And so we've had higher operating costs with that. I think that's really some of the biggest.
That's the biggest.
Also, 2019 include, we had to pay in that $94,000 that we ended up getting back. from that GEMT.
So that shows up in the expenditures mm-hmm. column as well.
Yeah.
Even though we more than made it back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it shows up in the income. So
it also shows up in the income. Okay. But that's how we end up with that net. So our net for 2019 is budgeted to be, for 2019, where we've budgeted for a net increase of about $607,000. So basically, we're sticking more than that into reserves.
Look at the legal and services line on this. 2016.
And then 2019, keep in mind that we've got a lot going in. There's capital equipment that hasn't been purchased yet. It's got capital equipment budgeted in there that we may or may not be having to make. So it there's a lot of variables going on. I'd say the one real certainty, this, like Carl pointed out, the Codan equipment, that's something that we put on here because it may be something we're responsible for, but they also may put that out as something funded through the 911 levy
tax.
The sprint rig may be something that the fire may have available, so we may not need to spend that. We do know for sure that we need to upgrade the life packs, and Carl's done a lot on that and has negotiated the pricing structure for those and a 5-year financing without interest. So we've rounded that up to about
$46,000.
Very last page, page 13. So that's kind of our capital equipment investment schedule. I don't know if Carl pointed out as well, one of the ambulances is due for replacement.
2020.
In this coming year, but it's actually overdue for replacement. But he's looking at dropping us down to four, just not replacing it, dropping from four to three, or from three, yeah, dropping from four to three.
Four to three if it breaks down.
We would not, where if we maintain a 4 ambulance fleet, we're due to replace one this year, in 2020. My thinking is, talking with our vehicle tech, we're not putting a whole lot of hours on that particular ambulance. It's truly a reserve ambulance. And then the question, so I feel it's unnecessary to replace that ambulance. In fact, I'm thinking about surplusing that ambulance, getting it off our books. We don't have the maintenance costs. If I were to act unilaterally, I'd say let's just do it. But I do want to discuss with Chief Collins and see what his thinking is on it, and then discuss with the county chiefs and see if we can maybe work a deal much like we did previously, where we can say this ambulance becomes a shared countywide resource that is housed somewhere, and if you have an ambulance breakdown, and while it's out for repairs, you can pull that one out of off of Orcas and use it.
This so 33.
It's one out that's housed at Station 35 right now out at Roche Harbor. We call it 34. Is the designation that it has.
How's this going to affect Roche Harbor and North Island response?
If we do that, what I would do is take this ambulance that's out front here and put that ambulance at Station 35.
What are the annual maintenance costs on it? Just roughly.
I'd have to take a look for you, Doc.
Our maintenance cost that we have in here is for all vehicles.
Right, and we're under budget with that because, and I think a lot of that had to do with the purchase of the 2017 ambulance, far fewer maintenance issues to deal with that. So we've been saving money that's allocated. And let me see what we've got here for, again, please bear with me while I'm trying to find it. It's down on page 8. And then it's in 12. No, that's station. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we've spent about, we budgeted for $20,000 for vehicle maintenance. We spent about $16,000 last year. We've only spent about $7,800 through August.
So that's for multiple units, obviously. Right. So I'm just thinking of what it used to cost the district to float the old Interim Medical Center was around $32,000 a year. This order of magnitude is nominal compared to something like that.
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to be really conservative with the numbers that I'm foreseeing, you know, and that I'm budgeting for. I'm hoping to come under a lot of these things, but I don't want to get caught flat-footed.
Yeah, for sure.
So really, the fourth ambulance gets used very little.
That's
it
correct.
It could be reserved. It could be reserved in another island. But it certainly may, if we had a disaster, it would be put in.
We would put it into service.
Yeah. And it doesn't have that many miles on it. A new one would cost a $500,000.
Maybe not that much. I think the last one,
the last one was
186 was the one that we bought in 2018. It was a 2017 model. I'm planning on the next time we have to replace one, I'm figuring about 210.
Is it fully equipped?
Yes.
Fully equipped?
Yes.
Not defibrillator.
Not with medical equipment inside.
We already have.
That is the package ready to go. The delivery package. The ambulance itself. So defibrillators, cardiac monitors, supplies, oxygen tanks, all we take from the existing ones that we have and restock.
And the reason we're going to new defibrillators is because
they're no longer supported.
But only if they break down does that become an issue.
That's correct.
It's a liability issue too.
Algorithms are out of date. These probably, for all intents and purposes, those defibrillators should have been replaced 4 years ago. They were kind of at the end of their life then.
We're kind of running on the Microsoft XP defibrillators.
We held on to it because we thought that a newer model, other than the version 15 or LifePak 15, was due to come out, and so we kind of waited. That LifePak, whatever they're going to call it, 16, 17, whatever, the latest and greatest just didn't happen. We just said, we got to go. So right now it's LifePak 15 version 4.
And we've got upgrades supported. They're going to support the upgrades with that as part of the.
We have an agreement with Stryker that says if they have a technology upgrade within 3 years, there is a sliding scale depreciation where they will buy back the ones we purchased and apply that to purchase of the latest and greatest.
That's good news.
I'm also planning on figuring as well, I'm figuring in a 10-year replacement cost. I'm going to start budgeting to know that in 10 years, we're going to have to do this all over again.
So how long
is it? Lucky you.
6 to 8 units is what they say. No. At least that's what I found. 6 to 8 years is what I found on the web. I'm figuring, given our call volume, we can probably sweep 10 out of that. But I'm going to figure out a 10-year replacement cost.
Thank you.
As far as the ambulances are concerned, when it gets that old, I think it becomes just like the defibrillators, a liability issue.
That's what Paul Spencer says. He's been saying that for years.
It's safety. It's not in.
Right. It is definitely not a code. It's not a code red response vehicle.
No, but even if it's not a code red response vehicle, and we send somebody out code yellow, and there's an accident. It's a big liability.
It is potential liability.
So a big
attorney is going to say, how old is this ambulance?
Yes.
What about EBS? What about they're going to know all the latest and greatest kinds of things. And we factor that against the fact that we're a small agency and we have limited income. But that's,
I think we're
trying really hard to follow best practices.
I think
20 years on an ambulance is, we're pushing the envelope. But I think it's reasonable given our circumstances.
The recent one one you acquired, I think, was a special deal you found in Snohomish.
That was the red one. We found that one basically to kind of, because we had one that was 25 years old, and that got us up to a better life expectancy. This one, the latest one, the 2017 model, came on with an interlocal agreement with another, once we didn't have to go out to bid. We were able to decide on the manufacturer that we liked, and we could become part of an interlocal with another agency.
So the sprint that's being replaced in 2020, do we need to do that? Can we reduce by one sprint?
That's what I'm hoping.
Okay.
Yes, I'm hoping that we will. I've got it factored in because I do want to keep our medics safe if they're responding, but if we're going to change our response model and maybe just rotate the two, great, because then I can use that money that we've allocated into vehicle reserves to help offset the cost of the ambulance that we need to replace.
What does a new sprint cost?
$80,000.
I'm thinking about $80,000.
80.
The 2015 that we purchased was just about that. I want to say it was like 78. The latest vehicle that fire got, the nice red shiny pickup, came out at 72, fully outfitted. So I figured 80 was a bit conservative number.
Thank you. Any other questions of Chief Kutzing or Chris Kahn? Dr. Mark?
Looking.
Lisa?
Not at the moment. I don't know what line it was. I haven't looked, but I was just curious about, I mean, obviously you've estimated for increased legal with the CID, but there might be increased legal with the integration, of course. But I wondered about advertising.
So advertising, that's something we talked about. So that covered, that's in the past, that has covered the, it's on page 5. And I think it's just like an empty line in the under the outreach. But yeah, it's a blank line on page 11 in outreach. And Carl and I were talking about this, whether or not really where it falls into, but basically it relates to the newsletters that we've sent out in the past. That's pretty much the extent of it, any sort of that or any
that,
legal
like,
notices.
Looking ahead in terms of outreach, if we're getting more expenses there.
You know, I feel like when Chief Martin came on and we were facing a levy renewal, kind of a do or die kind of one, some of the consultants that we talked with said, you need to be, you know, ramping up your outreach. We went to a quarterly newsletter plan, and that's where that historical use of that particular amount came from. It kind of fell off as we were transitioning, as he was transitioning out. I think a semi-annual newsletter is probably more appropriate, and maybe scaling back the production cost of it.
Yeah, it's probably kind of, doesn't need to be so big.
It's kind of a big and glossy.
Big and glossy.
And I want to look at those kinds of options. So I scaled back that, but I do think that, you know, especially when you're relying on levies and voter approval, you need to engage them and let them, you know, have some information in hand. So
we
I don't
probably
know.
Get more for our buck if we
I, that's,
don't that, go quite so fancy.
That's well, why I'm thinking, you know, that this was an appropriate number.
I will say, I mean, we did consult. I know there was consultation done with the about materials that went into it, the size and all that, and that
really
wasn't it didn't change the cost by much.
Sure.
So
I just
it's more just the
we
cost.
We should anticipate that there might be more of that in terms of public outreach, and it might not. I'm not talking about a mailer necessarily,
right.
But.
Just other things that we want to
we
do.
We have yet to have like a public meeting here. We might have to prep materials for that.
Yeah.
We actually have trifolds that have gone out to the Outer Island people and to the local the employees and the volunteers. And we have another trifold ready to go to two of them, town and county. Town's not quite ready yet, but county, is that? Isn't that the third trifold?
It would be to district residents.
District residents.
Yeah.
And some of that...
So there is...
Some of that's coming out of the integration fund rather than our budget.
Yes, but we have started that process of outreach and with printed materials.
So I had a question on the comparative expenditure report. On page 4, and looking at line note training for 2 years way down, notice a big increase over 2018.
The training?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because it actually got properly accounted for. In the past, in fact, if you look over 2017, there's a negative amount. So what's happened is that some of that includes training that we do with like the EMTs and stuff, or the actual EMT courses, and then we also do the training of the like WRCUS and other EMTs, and then those islands reimburse us for those costs, and that really is supposed to be up in revenue, and that has in the past those have gone against those.
Problem solved going forward. Then.
Yes.
Thank you.
But if you look at the combined, the other thing is that sometimes they just got put into goop, you know, like mixed up between two accounts. But if you look at kind of together the tuition and training, they tend to be consistent.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Warren, do you have any questions?
16.
No. Amazing, isn't it? I just want to remind you about the letter from the hospital. It's in about our agreement with the hospital.
I'm just, they are still, that just came to my mind
when you guys said something. It had nothing to do with this, but it,
say that again. Mark, what
they
say?
Were asking under the Peace Health Public Hospital District. We went through this 1.122 and all this, and they took in Pam. Talked with Beth, and they didn't think it was going to be a problem that we were duplicating any of their services. But we wanted, I thought it was prudent to get that in writing from them so that they don't come back next year and say, well, you didn't tell us. I mean,
that's already been requested.
Well, I know. My point was, I just thought of it. It's in the process. That's what it is. Because last I heard is we talked. I didn't know it was in process.
Yeah, they're in process.
It'll be done.
Anything else I can answer for you, Commissioner?
Yes, did this take you 2 hours?
Say what?
2.5, maybe.
Say what again?
How long it took it?
Two hours.
To generate this?
2 hours.
A couple hours.
Fire.
That was my
2 hours ago.
Thank you.
I only...
And thank you for the comparisons of the years. That really helps, even though you can't go back further because of the combination of...
Yeah, we could go back further, but they don't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense.
Even 2016 is not very
You have to kind of adjust for it, but at least you got some idea. I appreciate that.
And please, if there's anything that comes to mind
there will be.
Between now and our next regular meeting.
So on the next
Wednesday.
Tomorrow.
So Wednesday at 3.
So the next meeting on Wednesday, I will make some of these, we'll make these changes to this. For it to be presented, we'll factor in the 350,000, and so we'll factor that into this. And there's just a few other little cleanup changes that I was just to make it a little more sensible that I did while you guys were talking. But I won't be here. I'm going to be out of town, but I can call in and to answer any other questions.
Okay. You have a question?
So I would suggest to preempt the 350 and the attorney's fees being in two separate places, that you just bring that up right at the beginning. It's going to be a big question. There's a big question, but I would imagine if I was...
They will be very clearly
delineated. I would have that even a footnote saying how this is being worked out to show prudence and diligence and all those other tasteful things.
Oh, that's a good point.
That we're anticipating this is why, and this is where it's at, so someone doesn't say this or that or that, and then we get into enough.
Any other comments from the board? Chris, Carl, any comments?
Nothing.
Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Chris. You got gold?